The 2025 Prime Minister's Prize for Science was awarded this week to distinguished Professor Lidia Moravska. She is from the School of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences at QUT. And Lydia's done pioneering research into the air that we breathe and translated her discoveries into actions that safeguarded public health and our environment. Lidia Moravska, welcome to Sunday Extra and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me to the show.
It's a great pleasure. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your life before working in atmospheric sciences.
Well, as a little child, I developed that idea that I was going to be a nuclear scientist, nuclear physicist. I don't remember what sparked this interest. I was interested in lots of different things, but somehow nuclear physics was the greatest interest. And that's what I did. My first degree is nuclear physics. But towards the end of this, the degree, my undergraduate studies, I developed interest in something related, but a bit different, which is environmental radioactivity. So it's still radioactivity, but of the environment. And the topic of my PhD was radon and radon progeny in the air. Now, radon, radioactive gas, and the progeny are atoms of heavy metals, also radioactive. So that was my PhD.
And you were doing this study in Poland, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Both my undergraduate and PhD I received from the Jagiellonian University in Kraków in Poland.
So I suppose that leads to two questions, Lydia. How is it that you came to live in Australia and to specialise in atmospheric sciences?
Well, there was still one step from Kraków before I came to Australia, and this was my postdoc at the University of Toronto in Canada. I continued my research on radon progeny, but there I had an access to a very state-of-the-art instrumentation, just only a few instruments like this, to measure particles, the smallest particles, which we now call ultrafine particles. This is important because the fate of radon progeny in the air depends what else in terms of particles is in the air. So there was that one moment, summer 1990, when I thought, well, I wonder what's outside the window. All my experiments were conducted in an experimental chamber where the radon was and whatever else was in that chamber. What's outside the window? And I extended the probe of that instrument outside. And that was, wow, the concentrations of these particles on that busy Toronto street was higher than to what I had in my experimental chamber. Mm. The question was, what was it? I searched any available literature and I couldn't find anything. Well, that wasn't surprising because there were no instruments like this to measure these particles. Well, it was not very hard to relate those particles to the emission sources, which were plenty of vehicles on that Toronto street. But then I realized, well, it's a fascinating science. There's basically nothing known about this and of importance to human health. So when I got my position here at QUT soon after, a few months later, that was my goal, to set up this research area on ultrafine particles.
Yes, so could you tell us a little bit more about ultrafine particles? How small actually are they, and what are they particles of?
Well, there are, as the smallest of them are basically not much bigger than cells or atoms or molecules. They are very, very small. So we are talking about 1 nanometer, 2 nanometers. What are they made out of? A lot of different things. So first of all, every combustion process leads to formation of ultrafine particles in the first instance, mainly the small particles. And combustion, we are talking vehicle emissions, we are talking any industrial process, we are talking a barbecue, a candle, anything which is burning results in formation of ultrafine particles, which means plenty of processes around us. And then the problem is because they are so small, they can get deep into our respiratory tract.
Yeah, so from the sounds of things, there weren't great instruments for measuring ultrafine particles. How much is known about the impact that those ultrafine particles in the air have on us as humans?
Well, over that time, since we started experiments on ultrafine particles here and then colleagues in other places, other countries around the world, there is a large body of knowledge of the impact. The particles, because they are so small, they can penetrate to our blood system and basically reach any system in our body and result in impacts on basically any of our organs, leading to all kinds of diseases from, of course, respiratory diseases, cardiovascular diseases, impacts on brain, impact on nervous system, and so on. So every aspect, every organ in our body is affected. So that knowledge is well established. However, what is not established yet is so-called exposure-response relationship. So what is the concentration of particles over a period of time, which will trigger or result in this impact? So this is something which is what we aim to investigate now, soon.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with the winner of the 2025 Prime Minister's Prize for Science, distinguished Professor Lidia Moravska. And as we move on to the work that was critical in securing you the Prime Minister's Science Prize, Lidia, I feel like I should probably issue a bit of a trigger warning because it does relate to the COVID-19 pandemic. But I understand that one of the reasons you were particularly primed for the COVID response was because you'd also had an involvement in the SARS outbreak in Hong Kong some years earlier.
That's very much so. This was SARS-1 epidemic in 2003. So by that stage, our laboratory, our research on ultrafine particles, particles in the air, and basically anything which is in the air, was well established, but still we focus mainly on the smaller fraction of the particles. During that epidemic, I was asked to join a team in Hong Kong to try to solve the mystery of how 300 people were infected from one person spending one night in a large apartment complex building, 20-something buildings. This mission didn't take place because by that stage there was no evidence on the ground. But I started searching literature, like that time in Toronto, now here, what is known about, well, of course, physics, as a physicist, about the physics of these processes. And again, I found that was very little. I found three papers published over the span of 60 years. So again, it was the conclusion, wow, it's a fascinating and complex process and extremely important. So very soon after, I applied for a grant from the Australian Research Council. We received the grant, and this started our work on particles from human respiratory activities.
And it really does feel like your trajectory and the trajectory of the world were destined to collide when COVID-19 came along. And it wasn't just the research that you'd done, Lidia. It was also, if you like, the way you marshalled your knowledge and the knowledge of other sciences to really significantly impact the world response to COVID. Could you tell us what you did?
Well, when this pandemic started, our knowledge was very well established. So we understood very well how particles are formed, what happens to them, how they travel through the air, and then infection happens by inhalation of these particles. So when I saw at the beginning of the pandemic statements that the virus is not airborne, watching people in supermarkets wearing gloves and not masks, this really, to me, became something I must act. Because it was not not anymore kind of an academic discussion. Is it this way or this way? We will discuss this. People were dying because of this. So it was a decision which I took basically instantaneously when I saw a post from the WHO that the virus is not airborne. And within the next few days, I established a group of colleagues with whom I worked over the time of our investigations from many different areas. So, not only science, physics like me, but more importantly, engineers, architects, any other areas which play a role in this. And we've approached the WHO to try to explain that, yes, the virus is in the air. But it took another 3 months before it was accepted, and by bringing another over 200 scientists to support this when our voice was heard.
Yes, I was going to say, when you said group of colleagues, that sounded like a fair understatement of the work that you did. It was over 200 scientists in the end who co-authored a piece that you were the lead author of. Who did you submit that to, and what impact did it have?
It was published in the Journal of Clinical Infectious Diseases, but it was not the first journal we submitted that paper to. We submitted it to two journals, top journals before, which rejected it, considering that this is not important. So that was part of this just frustration as well, that those top journals didn't think that it was worth publishing.
And so what impact did that publication have?
From one day to another, it had an immediate impact. The paper was published on the 6th of July, 2020, and the next day the WHO accepted that there's emerging evidence of airborne transmission. Well, emerging evidence, that evidence was there all the time, but it was the most important that it was accepted. And from then on, slowly the wheel started turning in the other direction, which means accepting this airborne and gradually changing control measures to control the virus in the air and not on surfaces.
And I understand, Lydia, that the current focus of your research is similar to the issues you've just been describing, and in particular, indoor air quality. Could you tell us about what you're currently working on?
Well, current. It's been current for, well, basically since that radon in the air, which was importance indoors. So over the decades which passed, we've done lots of research on indoor air. So we continue this with the scope of a large ARC, Australian Research Council supported program, Thrive. The biggest focus of this is investigations and solutions for actual buildings. So less sort of basic research and most applied research, how to apply the knowledge we have, the technology we have in the actual buildings to lower the risk of infection transmission as well as a risk of exposure to other pollutants. If there's a bushfire smoke outside, buildings are to protect us against it. How are those buildings are going to do this? So we cannot look just at one problem, one pollutant, be it virus in the air, be in smoke. We have to look at this as a complex system and provide solution for the complex system. So that's what our research now is.
Lydia, did the changed practices that COVID caused, did they have ongoing permanent benefits, or were they sort of temporary things that people ebbed away from since? What needs to change in terms of indoor ventilation now?
Well, the problem is that our society still has very little understanding and recognition of the problem of air pollution. It is, you don't see it, it's invisible, it doesn't exist. So convincing people that yes, the stuff is in the air and it affects us, it's extremely difficult. But ultimately, it is not the responsibility of individuals to do something about this. It is the responsibility of government to ensure that our indoor spaces are safe and clean, which means we need appropriate regulations, indoor air performance standards measured right here in this building, what's in the air, and if it exceeds whatever we agree as the levels, action is taken. Like with the water, we don't have to check the quality of the water. We know that it is guaranteed clean.
Did you take the opportunity of winning the Prime Minister's Science Prize to make that point directly to the top in Australia, Lydia?
Oh, of course. Would you expect that? I didn't. Yes, as I did. I, of course, mentioned this to the Prime Minister, not for the first time. We had a conversation with the Prime Minister about this last year in August. So we talked about this during the award dinner on Monday. And Prime Minister passed it in a way to Minister S. And Minister S acknowledged in his speech a little bit later that he got a crash course on air quality, which he did from me, including demonstration of the concentration using my little portable CO2 meter, and a role to play, which we will certainly remind him that he has that role to play. He said this.
You had your portable CO2 reader at the Prime Minister's Awards. What was the reading like? Any cause for concern?
Oh, no, was very good. Well, actually, the Parliament House, like Parliament houses in the state, they have been refurbished. We know about this to provide very good air quality. I wish everywhere else air quality is as good as it is there.
And just finally, Lydia, what does it mean to you to be awarded the 2025 Prime Minister's Prize for Science?
Well, this is such a huge privilege that it's, for the first few days after I learned, I just was still pinching myself, is it real or not? So this is. But beyond personal satisfaction and pride, I hope that this will help me help us, that our voice is heard about the need for action and implementation of our knowledge towards clean air. So that's what my hope is, and that the voice now will be heard louder and better.
Lydia Marowska, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Distinguished Professor Marowska from the Queensland University of Technology is also the director of the International Laboratory of Air Quality and Health and the winner of the 2025 Prime Minister's Prize for Science.
Getting in touch with ABCRN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.